Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. There are success stories all around us. Like, so for example, Honda. I was doing a little bit of history, and I sort of typed in, well, where did Honda come from? Because I really don't know, but I discovered that Mr. Honda was a mechanic at a garage. His job was to tune cars to prepare them for races. And Mr. Honda, I'm calling him Mr. Honda, founded a piston ring company manufacturing in 1937, I think it is. He won a contract to supply piston rings for a major automobile company, Toyota. But soon after, he lost the contract due to poor quality of the product, which is a really big surprise because when you think about Honda, you don't really think in terms of poor quality. He took the time to better understand Toyota's quality control processes. And by 1941, Honda was able to mass produce piston rings acceptable to Toyota. Toyota took about 40% stake in his company, but Honda was demoted from president to senior managing director. The piston ring manufacturing plant was destroyed by bombs in World War II, 1944. Honda sold the salvageable remains of the company to Toyota and used the proceeds to open another company, Honda Technical Research Institute, in 1946. He worked with about 12 staff in, get this, 172 square feet room. That's a small room. I mean, that is like smaller than my son's bedroom. They built and sold improvised motorized bicycles by building their own copy of an engine, a motorcycle engine, and supplying them to customers to attach to their bicycles. And then Honda Motor Company grew, and in a short time became the largest manufacturer of motorcycles in 1964. This is something I didn't know. I didn't realize they were. Honda thereafter entered the mini pickup truck market and finally into the car segment. Today, they're a serious competitor to Toyota. So what's the lesson learned here? I guess it's easy to think or look at a company and think, I could never do this. But of course, all of these companies took decades to get where they are today. But they had to start somewhere with an idea, and they had to believe that it was an important idea, and mostly important, they had to get started. I think the other thing we can learn is they had to figure out how to be the best at what they do to improve their quality and maybe lean out the process in some way that they're doing it very efficiently. So I guess that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about getting started on the show here with my guest, Michael Beer. And Michael is a lean expert. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here.
It is. You know, Michael, I've been really excited about having you on the show because you and I have had the opportunity to talk previously about lean activities, about total quality management, about Kaizen opportunities. And I want to bring that all into the show. But the first place to really start is finding out a little bit about Michael. So tell us about Michael Beer.
Well, what's there to say about Michael Beer? I have been a management consultant for about 20 years now in my own practice. And through that, in that 20 years, I have looked at and worked with companies and organizations that wanted to improve their processes to become more effective, to become more efficient, to add to the bottom line, grow customer satisfaction. I'm a lean black belt in healthcare. And in a nutshell, that's Michael Beer.
That's Michael Beer, yeah. I mean, and you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, I know that you've spent a lot of time traveling. You've been on the road a lot. But let's step back first and explain maybe one of your credentials, okay? Because you said you're a lean black belt, and the first thing I want to do is say, hi-ya!
calm down, Richard.
But don't do that.
Right? We don't do that, no.
No.
Lean, because it came from the East, and I loved your opening story, by the way, with Honda.
Toyota.
And Toyota, because that's where Lean started. Lean started with Toyota, who wanted to become the best car manufacturing organization in the world, and they developed the Lean processes. And then business got a hold of these ideas and said, gosh, can we do the same kind of principles that Toyota's using and use it in a non-manufacturing setting? So Lean now is used virtually everywhere and certainly in healthcare. So my Lean journey started probably about 9 or 10 years ago when I was very intrigued with this. And I took sort of a first level Lean training, which is the green belt. And I followed that up a few years later with a black belt. And I guess the difference is where the green belt works within an organization to help improve processes and departments, while a black belt is more of an enterprise-wide view. So how can we integrate this everywhere and then integrate the integrations?
Within the whole organization. You know, it's interesting that you would say that in terms of your journey, because my first touch on this was actually going back over 35 years ago. And so I have a bit of a story myself in terms of Lean. But really, at that point in time, it was called total quality management. And I worked for Honda when I was 19 years of age. So this would have been in the 80s. And I worked in the inventory, the parts department for them, organizing parts. I was a basic parts guy, right? An inventory kid, and handled a lot of that stuff. And they brought in total quality management, introduced it at that point in time. So this stuff has been around a while.
Oh, I'm familiar with TQM, and I used to work for Transport Canada. And I remember a year way before I started getting on this whole the journey on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
We were doing TQM at Transport 30 years ago. I hate to age myself, but I guess I just have.
Now, I did the same thing, actually. But you know what? The interesting thing is, I would have to say for myself personally that that was probably, what a gift I received as a young man just starting his career out. Like Honda gave me an incredible gift because I have used that knowledge and experience in my work throughout my whole career.
As have I, and that's probably what influenced me to actually go and do all that formal training. The thing, too, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, it changes the way you look at things.
It does.
Even simple things. The other day, I was in a hotel in the U.S., and I was at the breakfast buffet, and I was getting a coffee. And I looked at this, and I said, my gosh, this coffee service is not lean because it doesn't flow. You get your cup here, then you have to go to the other side, then you have to go back to the other side, and people don't flow through. I'm going, man, we could really simplify this. And should I say something? And I figure, no, I just need a coffee let it go, and that would help.
Yeah. Well, that's the challenge, right? When you're an expert in something, it's easy to see, I don't want to say the mistakes, or maybe the mistakes or the weaknesses. Give me a word here that other people have or other organizations have.
How about opportunity to optimize?
Opportunity to optimize. A great word.
You say you want to bring somebody that opportunity, they go, wow, yeah, we'll listen to you. Tell somebody you have a mistake, people tend to back off a little bit.
No, that's actually really good. That's really good. I could learn from that, actually, because I'm often paid to be candid.
Well, you can use it.
And I can use it, right? Opportunity to optimize sounds really good. In terms of lean, and I know we're going to dive into this a little bit more, but can you give us sort of a high-level definition, and then we'll go to a break and we'll come back from there? What exactly is lean?
Lean really doesn't stand for anything. It's just to make things, you know, smaller and tighter and everything else. However, I have used it as an acronym, and I use it as an acronym, and I use it as leveraging, empowerment, and accountability now.
Oh, wow.
Because when you drive it to the front line, that's exactly what happens.
You know what I think we're going to do, Michael? I think we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we are going to talk about your acronym for Lean and maybe how you actually implement that. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Michael Beard, a Lean expert in the healthcare industry. Healthcare, right?
Healthcare.
That's your healthcare industry. Now, you know what? I didn't write this down just before the break. We were talking. I said, well, give us a brief definition of what Lean is. And you so interestingly told us it didn't really mean anything, which I thought was interesting, but you had an acronym. What was the acronym again?
Leveraging Empowerment and Accountability Now.
So what does that really mean?
That's an excellent question. Let me just backtrack a little bit of background around Lean and some of the... There's two main principles to Lean. The first principle is that everything is done with respect. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. Lean isn't about cutting, chopping, or whatever. It's about dealing with respect for everyone associated with the process, whether it's an employee, a customer, a manager, it doesn't matter. The second principle of Lean is never do anything without listening to the voice of the customer first. So when you think about that, who listens to the voice of the customer the most? Generally people on the front line, because they're constantly interacting.
They're always talking to people.
Exactly. But sometimes they're the least people that we ask. Because, you know, really when we think about it, our frontline staff knows exactly what all the problems are and knows how to solve them. So if we drive Lean down to the front line to really come up with a solid cultural change to becoming a Lean philosophy and a Lean organization, that's when you can really, and you empower people to do that. But with empowerment comes accountability. Do that now, and it makes all the difference in the world to the customer first, to the employee, and to the company.
To the organization.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like that, almost that perfect stakeholder triangle.
Exactly.
You know, the three points, right? You know, customer, company, community, or the three C's is the other way to put it too. And I know that some people add a fourth C in there sometimes, but company, customer, community tends to work out really well. You said that it has to do with respect. It's interesting that you'd say that because you talked about the story I started off with Honda and Toyota, and I gave the example about when I was with Honda years ago, like when I was just starting my workout. So I'm going to share some stories with you.
Okay,
this is going to be very different. It's not going to be just an interview here. It's going to be like a storytelling, and hopefully you'll share with some of me,
we'll
too.
We'll have a contest of who gets the best stories out.
Oh, no, there we
so
go.
So you can phone in and tell us.
Yeah, there we go. I'm not giving the number out today.
All right.
But when I was 20 years of age, I got asked to join Honda's Total Quality Management Circle. And I was the youngest guy. Everybody else was 35 and 40 and plus in their careers. And who was I? As somebody who knew nothing. But going to your point of respect and listening to the customer, voice of the customer, who spent so much time in front of the customer? You know, I was the guy, right?
Right.
This is how I'm going to relate it to what you're saying, right? And then we'll bring it back to your healthcare. But I was the guy at that point in time that stood at the front counter. And if a customer wasn't happy about their car not working, I heard it, right? If the customer wasn't happy about a part or if they wanted something, I went and wrote it down and got it for them, right? So, you know, real stories, real frontline stuff, because you're right there with the customer, and that's what you're talking about.
Exactly. Let me give you an example.
Yeah, give me an example.
I was working at a hospital in North Carolina and was working with the radiology department. So I asked them, so what are your customers complaining about? What's the deal here? And they said the customers, what they complained the most about was the amount of time they have to lie on that cold, hard glass or whatever it is. So before they arrange the machinery, the techs have to run back and forth before they actually do the image and then they help the patient off. So they were concerned about the amount of time they were lying there. So we said, okay, what do you think we can do? And they said, well, we're running around a lot. So we used some very simple lean tools, one called a spaghetti diagram. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You do a diagram of the workspace and you literally watch a person and track them on the various movements that they make around while they serve a customer. And what they discovered was that the layout wasn't optimal. So they said, if we took this wall down, you know, we could really change things around. And I asked them, do you really need to take the wall down, or do you need to drill a hole in the wall to pass a cable through to move a machine to the other side? Because taking walls down costs money.
They said,
that'll work. We got the guys in from maintenance. They drilled a hole. We moved the machinery. And again, we were tracking time. How long does it time to do an image? At the end of the project, when we were done, we found out that they were walking significantly less, and because of the effectiveness and efficiencies that they brought to the process, they weren't as tired at the end of the day, but they could service two extra customers a day.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a huge improvement.
That's a huge improvement and a huge financial improvement for the hospital with no more overhead.
Now, out of curiosity, I want to step back. It's great. I want to step back a little bit in terms of what was the original objective?
The original objective was to decrease the amount of time an image took so that the customer was the least inconvenience to the customer lying on that table.
And what was the surprised benefits?
I don't know if there was any – I guess the surprise benefit was by doing something so simple, they could actually – that efficiency could happen.
That could happen, and they were now servicing two customers extra a day.
Exactly, and there was also another thing that they – I guess they anticipated this or hoped for, but we showed it in numbers because we actually did some surveying.
Yeah.
Patient satisfaction went up.
Oh, okay.
Because things took faster. It didn't take as much time. They were out quicker, and the patients were very grateful for that. So everybody won.
Everybody won. So the reason why I asked that question, Michael, was I sometimes wonder when we're looking to do improvements, process improvements and everything, you know, we sit there and we say, you know, well, I want to increase my bottom line by 10%. I want to increase my efficiency by 13%. I want to add more customers in my door. But then I don't know if that's always the best way to look at it. I don't think there's anything wrong with those things, but it almost sounds like you did some of the work to improve the process and you discovered that there were some added benefits that maybe you hadn't anticipated, or maybe you did.
Well, we thought that something might happen because obviously we were addressing the voice of the customer, the complaints.
So we
said, let's address the complaints. Let's measure before, measure after, see what the effect is.
See what the effect would be.
And the effect was positive. We got huge positive effect everywhere from in terms of revenues, from the terms of patient satisfaction, and from employee satisfaction as well. So it was really great. So that's what happens when you listen to your customers.
The voice of the customer.
What does the customer want? Because they're going to tell us how to serve them. We just have to deliver.
Yeah, and then the VOC, I think, is an important one. I think sometimes maybe in business we say we want to do that, but we don't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is Richard Landon for Set for Success. I'm hanging out with Michael Beard, Lean Expert. Michael and I are just going to have a conversation today about some of the stories and things that we've done in our careers and share them with you. And hopefully if that helps you guys improve your business or whatever you're working on, that'd be great. This is Richard Landon for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello and welcome back, everybody. And I am hanging out with my friend, and actually I would call us friends, Michael Beard, a Lean Expert. Michael and I have known each other for probably 10 years or 12 years in business, so probably around there.
Yeah.
And Michael, the reason why I wanted you on the show was I've always been fascinated by how your career has progressed as an expert, because I know that you've done a lot of work in the healthcare industry and in many different capacities, and you've developed yourself into being a lean expert and being able to apply an excellent skill that I think a lot of organizations need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The question becomes, I guess, is how do you go about applying lean to an organization? Isn't that the big question?
That's the big
question. One of them, anyway.
That's the big question. And I guess it starts at the top.
Okay.
You have to have a senior leadership team that really understands what this is all about and is committed to becoming lean. Not doing lean, becoming lean, because it's a change in philosophy. It's a change in culture. The next thing that you have to do before you do anything is you have to prepare the organization for the culture change and help them work through it. And if we don't help organizations through that transitional part of change, the psychological things where you have to answer people, how is this going to affect me? How is this going to benefit me? How are we going to do this? What's the end result going to be? How is it going to benefit our customers? How will it benefit me? It's not going to work. It's just that simple. But once we've done that and we've got everything we've got everyone in the right space and the right where they need to be, that's when we bring lean into the organization, not as a management tool, but as a frontline tool. So we train frontline and managers in lean processes so they work through this together.
So it sounds to me like you start at the top down, but really you begin at the bottom up.
Exactly.
Right? Which is very different. And in business analysis, right, and particularly in strategic business analysis, and you go through the training on that, it talks about the different ways of initiating an initiative. So I'm going to use the word initiative twice there. One, obviously, is top-down. It's on the strategic agenda. This is what we're going to do. Another one is a bottom-up. You have the idea in the bottom, and then you move it up through the organization. You get approval for it. And then there's sort of mid-management. There's a couple others, but those are maybe the big ones. But it sounds to me like the way you just presented that, it sort of happens in both spaces. You have to get commitment from the top. But you don't want the top to necessarily run it. You want to get the people at the bottom involved so that they're providing the information that's needed.
Exactly, because the bottom line is the top can't run it.
Okay.
Think of any organization. If you really want to bring in an initiative, if you really want to become lean, everybody has to become lean. That means you have to engage everybody in the organization. So it can't just be the responsibility of senior management. It has to be the responsibility of everyone. So you have to think in terms of the change has to be top-down, bottom-up driven. And when you start to get senior management and you start to get some key frontline people initially involved to help get everyone else involved, that's when you can make some pretty dramatic cultural change.
Yeah. What is one of the more significant changes that you've been involved with an organization?
Don't quite know what you mean by that.
I guess, let me rephrase the question then. Is there an example you can provide in an organization that just didn't apply it to one part of the organization, but they applied it to the overall organization? What were some of the significant changes that they were able to see?
Some of the significant changes are the silos cease to exist.
Okay, so that's a big one. I mean, often people have silo. We can break them down a little bit, and we can just go through a few. Silos is a big issue with a lot of organizations because people throw things over the silo to the next person, say, hey, it's not my responsibility.
Exactly. And when we start to get silos to break down, then right away organizations start to dramatically change. So that's one huge effect, that silos breakdown. You get an engagement at the frontline level that you just don't see in organizations where you try to drop this thing down from the top, because you need buy-in from everyone. Because the bottom line is the frontline knows what the problems are, they know how to solve them, and they know how to implement the change. You have to empower them to do that and engage them to do that. And if you do that, that's when that's tremendous change in the organization happens.
Yeah, and I would think that work satisfaction, I mean, all of those little soft things that
all
are difficult,
of those things all
they
fall.
Measure all sort of follow with it, right? You start
exactly.
to see, you know, I actually have something to do with it. What are some of the bigger challenges that you've had putting lean into an organization?
Middle management,
really?
Middle management.
Okay, that would surprise me a little bit.
That,
but okay.
You know, the front line's enthusiastic, senior management's enthusiastic, and middle management sometimes just wants to stop. Why do we want to change? We've been doing this forever. It seems to work not. And that really is where some of the biggest issues are, is that middle management layer.
So how do you get over? How do you get around that? Or how do you not get around it? That sort of sounds like you're circumventing. How do you work through that?
You work through that, again, by engaging middle management and frontline together, and then senior managers holding middle managers accountable for making the change happen or making the process change happen.
It's interesting you would say that. I've done a few projects that where I was responsible for getting it on the strategic agenda of the organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and usually from the executive, like the CIO or the CFO or whatever, CEO, but they have a board of directors, et cetera.
Right.
So it needs to be voted on, right? And interesting thing is that when you go out and start facilitating an idea and you're working with the frontline people, they can embrace it really quick. The biggest challenge I've always had throughout my career has been middle management,
mm-hmm.
interesting enough. And usually a lot more work, a lot more maintenance, a lot more talking a lot more convincing. And not even convincing, realizing it's a good idea and that. So do you have anything you can share on that?
Well, yeah. It's one of the things that we do, and the book is coming out in June.
Oh, you're going to write a book on
no,
this?
No, I've written a book.
Oh,
I just have
to
finish writing it.
Yeah,
and do the editing. But the book is about lean daily management.
Okay.
And that's really how we engage those middle managers. So when you think every department in an organization, let's take a hospital, every department in a hospital has different objectives. And so we say to managers, so what are your key performance indicators? What do you look at the first thing when you come in the morning? What are you concerned about? What's easy to measure? You don't need a lot of math. What are you looking for? And everybody knows, they all know what
they
that
all know
is.
What it is.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So we say, fine. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to track those on a regular basis. So what we do is we set up a what we call a Gemba board. And Gemba just means a walk to where the work is done. So we set up a board and we put visual indicators there. We set it up by month, and you know, we've got some cute graphics and things. But basically, this is what happens. Let's take a nursing unit in a hospital.
Sure.
One big deal
example.
Is falls. So you want to track the number of falls.
Like falls of nurses?
They no,
fall
falls
or
of patients.
Patients.
Okay. So patient
all right, let's
fall.
Get clear, yeah.
So we say, okay, you have to decide when the day starts and ends because you're tracking it every day. So let's say the day starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. So every day at 8:02, you sit down and you say, okay, how many
falls.
Do we have any falls? If you didn't have any falls, you color the little square in green. If you had a fall, you color it in red. What's your rapid cycle improvement to identify the fall? What are you going to do to fix it so it doesn't happen again? Let's document and put that countermeasure up. And you track your key performance indicators every day. So you've got a board. You've got everything up there. Here's how you hold middle managers accountable. Every single day in that hospital, the senior executive team does a Gemba walk for an hour. In other words, they go to as many units as they can. And in a week, they will come at least once, maybe three times to your unit. They gather around this board, and a frontline staff member explains activity from the last visit, so from day to day. So we didn't have any falls or this happened, this is what we did. And every time they come, every day, even though senior managers isn't there, they do this meeting, this little huddle every day.
Yeah.
And the responsibility for explaining what happened rotates to a new frontline staff. The manager has to make sure that all of this stuff happens. So this is how we slowly bring middle managers into this milieu. As part of this, we can identify other problems that might take a little more than just a quick countermeasure, where we can put projects that can have really significant savings and process improvement as well. It all comes out of
those initiatives.
Yeah, those that walk.
We're going to take a short break, but I want to come back with kicking it off with the Gemba walk.
Gemba. You're going to learn some Japanese today.
I got to learn some Japanese today. We're going to start back with the walk because this is a new language that I'm learning. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm hanging out today with Michael Beard. Michael is a lean expert. You know, Michael, during the break, you were getting me to speak Japanese. right? So I think it was Jemba is the Jemba.
Jemba, yeah. Jemba now to understand, I don't speak Japanese except for like the 45 lean words that I know.
That you can do. I can say Kaizen.
Very good.
There you go. Right?
I can't spell it, but I can say it.
There you go. And I do understand that that is like a walkabout. We were joking a little bit about, you know, a little Australian in there is a bit of a walkabout for the senior management to sort of see what's going on within the organization.
Exactly.
Yeah. You provided some really great examples of some of the stuff you worked on and that, but I'm curious, and this is sort of the money side of me, right? You know, the business, the bottom line, everything. Have you ever worked with organizations that have saved like millions or $1 million or anything? Like, give me a big example of something that you've done.
All right, a big example. Hospital I was working at in southwestern Nebraska. We were working with them to put Lean into place. And they were getting complaints from the visiting surgeons. So they're a small hospital, so the surgeons come in to do the surgery. Yeah,
they rotate, which is very common.
Very common. Yeah. And it was inaccuracies in the surgical trays. They were getting all kinds of complaints from the surgical techs. They were tired setting stuff up, and they just didn't know what to do. And so we did a type of Gemba walk. And Gemba walk actually describes what I talked about earlier, but it also describes actually following people around and watching what they do, recording things to see, can we come up with some kind of efficiencies? So they did the project, and they thought, gosh, you know, maybe there is a better way. And they realized that a lot of the supplies they had were sterile packaging, so that, again, to prepare the trays, you know, how do we do this? And they realized that we were using surgical techs basically as warehouse people, which wasn't necessarily their expertise. So what we did, we put the project together with the physicians, we put the project together with the surgical techs, and with materials management.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So the first thing they did is they sat down with the first thing we did was we put pedometers on people to see how far they were walking.
That would actually sort of identify, you get some hard numbers there.
Some hard numbers. We wanted to make sure we had some real numbers. So we did that, and they sat down, materials management, this techs and the docs sat down, and they said, okay, so what do you want? So Dr. Lannan, you're coming in to do a knee, this is what I need. You're coming in to do an elbow, this is what I need. You're coming in for a colonoscopy, this is what I need. And what they did, they went to Walmart, they bought some bins, storage bins.
Yeah.
And they literally in the storage bin put in all the supplies for the various surgeries. They kind of clamped them together so people wouldn't borrow things. List on top, there's the doctor's name, Dr. Lannan, you know, a left knee, a right knee, all the rest of this. So now what happens is when the physician comes in, or they know the physician's coming in, they phone down to materials management. They said, Lannan's coming, you know, give me two knees and an elbow. And they send the stuff up. Surgical techs lay it out. Doctors are happy because all the supplies they need for their surgeries are there, exactly what they want. The techs aren't running around like crazy. And at the end of the year, hard savings was 126 miles of walking and just south of $1 million in cost savings.
Oh, wow.
Because
that's significant
of overtime
for a small hospital
and everything else. It was huge. And, of course, that's bottom line savings.
Bottom line savings.
Just under $1 million.
Because this was down stateside, right?
Yes.
US. So a lot smaller hospitals, I'm thinking, correct? So they're almost like smaller. I'm going to call them small businesses or intermediate businesses.
That's exactly what they are. This is about a 25-bed hospital with about 300 full-time employees.
Yeah. So that's a significant savings
for an
organization.
It's a tremendous amount of money. And that, of course, that's $1 million in profit.
Yeah, okay, right to the bottom line.
Right to the bottom line.
Because when they saved it. Amazing that these are some of the things you can do. Now, I've done a little bit of research in terms of Kaizen just before we met and everything, and I know a little bit about it from my past and stuff like this, but it sounds to me like you're really talking about some of the almost sensible things that we can do to improve things in our lives.
Exactly. You put a team together of people who are involved in the process. You always throw in someone who's not involved in the process at all. It's like, remember Gilligan's Island?
Yeah.
The ideal number of people on a team is the number of people on Gilligan's Island.
Yeah,
Skipper and Gilligan, the millionaire and his wife, the movie star, the professor and Marianne.
And Marianne.
Right? However, every once in a while, somebody would sneak on the island, wreak havoc, and escape, leaving them stuck.
Yeah.
That person, like for instance, in a project like we did, I just talked about, we would have maybe brought a dietary person in, someone from dietary, to sit on the committee. What do they know about all of this? Nothing.
Yeah.
What's their purpose? is we have to explain what we're doing so that they can understand. That explanation helps us understand and look for better ways. And because they're asking the questions, because they don't know, that really gets us thinking, and that's where a lot of that innovation comes in. So that extra person who knows nothing about the process is really a valuable member of the team, even though in the beginning they seem a little lost.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that because I've used that same technique in other situations too.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was a lean technique, by the way, but having somebody that knows absolutely nothing about the process and then having them ask all sorts of questions because you got to explain yourself to them.
Exactly. And then you start to think, well, do I really need to do this? Or can I do this in a different way to get the same or better result?
Yeah, no, that's quite excellent. I'm curious now because I can't help but think that some of the listeners might actually be interested in a career in this area. Sorry, I don't want to set up competition for you.
Well, that's okay. I'm not getting younger, so.
Yeah, there you go. But how do you end up becoming a lean expert? I mean, I know you talked in the first segment a little bit about it, but what's the journey to be able to provide these services either internally or externally to clients?
My journey was I took a lean green belt course.
Yeah.
And when I did that online and by mail, etc. And then when I did a black belt course, I looked for an organization that had credibility because obviously there's a lot of stuff out there that has no credibility. But I went to the Institute of Industrial Engineers and actually spent a couple of weeks in Atlanta studying. And the week between, we did a week, and then they sent us away for 2.5 months, and we had to find a place to do a project.
Okay, so like volunteer to do one?
Volunteer to do a project, or a lot of the folks were employed by someone, so they naturally, you know, went back and did as part of their regular duties.
Sure.
I had to find a place and volunteer, and ironically, I worked with a hospital who needed their warehouse optimized. So that was my project. My formal project for the black belt. And then we went back, we presented the our projects, and then we finished our course. Then we had to take an exam after that. And when all of that was satisfactorily completed, they gave me my black belt.
Oh, there, congratulations
on
that.
You.
I am a bit curious now, is this something you could learn if you know absolutely nothing about it?
Yes, I think you can.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it really, when you sit down at the end of the day, this is just stuff that makes sense.
That's me. Okay.
They teach you a lot in terms of measurement and some, you know, mathematical applications, et cetera, but really when the bottom line is, it's what makes sense. It's the right thing to do for the customer.
If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that, Michael?
Well, they could get on my website. It's www.theleanconsultinggroup.com. And consulting group, there's two G's. Sometimes people make that mistake. Or they could give me a call at the office, area code 204-237-9257, and I'd be delighted to chat with anyone.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the things I've always enjoyed is when we get together and have a conversation, I always learn something new, right? I mean, there's always a story in it. I mean, you're great with stories and examples that anybody can understand. So I think that's an important thing in terms of your communication skills. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
There's a lot of people out there who think that lean is complex and complicated. My advice to you is don't overthink it. Make it simple, because if it's simple, everybody will do it. And if everybody does it, you'll get the results you want.
That's a great, great final thought. Michael, thank you for joining me today. I mean, I know it took us a bit to get you on the show, so I really appreciate you availing us to your schedule. It's greatly appreciated.
Well, thank you for having me, Richard. I really appreciate it.
And as for the listeners, thank you for tuning in. And you know how I like to end the show. I always like to throw out a bit of a request to you guys, the listeners. If you have an idea or question or a thought about the show, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I do want you to remember something extremely important. Do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.